Hello, this is Phyllis Furumoto with Reiki, Balancing Form and Essence. And I'm here today with Lynette Kirkman. She's from Australia, and she'll be coming on in just a few minutes. This is a whole series of interviews that I'm doing, and this first group, which is in January, I'm concentrating on touching the lives and a little bit of story about those women who were really pioneers of Reiki in their own country. Lynette was one of the first classes in Australia, and when that happened between Beth Ray and Marta Getty and Bunny Sugarman, you know, the whole it seemed like the whole of Australia was alive with Reiki, and there was lots and lots of things going on. So I'm really happy to welcome Lynette Kirkman. Lynette, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Phyllis, very much.
Yeah. And can you tell us what it was like back then and how it was for you when you met Reiki?
Yeah, well, you know, not like it is today where, you talk about Reiki and many people have heard of it. Basically, no one really had heard of it in those days. I was actually studying with a woman at the time. I was doing a diploma in clinical ecology, and, you know, that qualification provided me, with the opportunity to practice as a naturopath. And I was doing my training with a woman at the time who'd been organizing rebirthing classes for a couple who'd been coming over from the USA. And, you know, this had been going on for a little while. And then we received an invitation from another rebirther who was also a Reiki master, and that was Marta Getty. Would we be interested in organizing a class? I hadn't even heard of Reiki. I had not had, obviously, an experience of Reiki. But it was so interesting because just the brochure really spoke to me, and I just knew that this workshop was meant for me and I was to do it. So we said yes, that we would organise that class for Marta, which we did, and, of course, we both participated. And, you know, something was happening for me in that class. I knew that this was the right path for me, and I really connected to it. Marta, of course, is a beautiful person, and so I really connected to her. And my life was changing. I was actually in the middle of quite a major change. Toward the end of the year before, I'd gone through quite a profound spiritual realization, revelation, and so this was kind of part of that journey of opening me up to Reiki. And, yeah, so I guess from that point on, at the end of 84 and leading into my doing Reiki early 85, my life hasn't been the same since. And if you'd have even said to me at the beginning of that 94 what I was doing today, I would have just went, no way, you know. So, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So really changed my life.
Yeah, well, I can hear that. And I just need to get a few dates straight. So you met Marta in 85?
Yep. April of 85, we had a stage class, yeah.
Yeah, and for you, well, at that point, what would you have defined spirituality? What would your definition of spirituality been back then?
Oh, that's a really good question. I guess really a person's inner journey, not a religion, not connected to any one religion, although I understand that somebody can be quite spiritual within a religion. For me, it's really about the inner journey that someone takes, that connection with the essence within, the wisdom within, the knowledge that we have within. That to me is what I would call a spiritual journey. So for me, Reiki very much gave me, was a part of that, you know, was another piece of that that kind of was adding to that. And yes, so really an inner journey, I suppose.
So was rebirthing a part of that spiritual journey for you also?
Oh, not like Reiki was. I mean, certainly there was growth and personal growth through rebirthing, and I went on later to do actually rebirthing training. But you know, nothing in my life has touched me the same as Reiki did. And, you know, I went on, and even though I continued my diploma of clinical ecology and, you know, began initially to set up a practice, nothing had touched me the way Reiki had.
Uh-huh. Oh, amazing. And tell me again, clinical ecology.
Yeah.
And then you got to be a naturopath?
Yeah.
So, but
I honestly didn't.
I think this is one of those language discrepancies.
Well, you could
so I love the title, clinical ecology.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, but that's for a human being.
Sorry, what was that?
But that's for you know, when I think about the word ecology, I think about...
like environmentally.
Yeah, right. But you're speaking about a human's ecology.
Absolutely.
Wow, that's interesting.
It's probably changed names now. That was like 25 years ago, you know. So.
Yeah, but this is a great perspective, actually, to look at our lives as a kind of ecology, you know, in our systems. I think that's a great concept. So, okay, we won't dwell on that, but just to get it straight in my head.
Mm-hmm.
So then you met Reiki, and
yes.
You were very taken by it. And did you start like a treatment practice, or...?
Well, interestingly enough, because I was working already under supervision in a PRAC environment with a qualified naturopath, I was already in a clinical setting and a full flourishing practice.
Uh-huh.
And so the Monday after we had the class, I had my hands on somebody along with Sandra, who was the lady that I was doing my training with. So I basically, my journey of public practice started the following day after my workshop, but it was in a situation where I was being supervised.
Uh-huh.
You know, it wasn't a situation where I was thrown into an environment where I was expected to be there for somebody in that full capacity of a practitioner. I was in a supervised position. So I was basically, we were both... Actually, it was like a joint treatment that we were doing. We were doing sharing Reiki with clients that were coming through.
Mm-hmm. Great. And then eventually you went on to take the next levels and become a master.
Yeah, well, you know, after that first workshop, Sandra kind of pulled out of organizing. And in fact, interestingly enough, she wanted to cancel that very first class. Because we'd had a 3-day rebirthing training the weekend before, and so she felt pretty wiped out and, you know, kind of on the Monday or Tuesday, I can't remember which way the 3 days went, but said, look, you know, we need to cancel this class coming up this weekend, the Reiki class, and I just went, no way, I'm doing this class, and I was doing all the legwork, so, you know, she agreed to continue. But then after that, decided that she would pull out of organizing, and so I was really happy to continue organizing Samatha, which I did. I went on and did second stage. And one of my major lessons around money came up with me going into the second stage, into second degree. And I guess, you know, each step of the way I've noticed these lessons that Reiki has brought me that I'm very grateful for, and money's been one of those big ones. And when I was getting ready to, like, I knew Marta was coming, and
uh-huh.
I felt really ready to do second degree,
uh-huh.
but I just didn't have the money. You know, I didn't have it. I didn't have it in the bank. I didn't have it anywhere, you know. And I thought, you know, and I was in a lot of conflict about it. I thought, okay. And then I just handed it over to the highest purpose and went, okay, I can't deal with this anymore. I have to let this go. If I'm meant to do second degree with Marta when she comes this time, you're going to need to find a way for me to do this. And if I'm not meant to do it, that's okay. I wasn't attached to it. And yet there was this strong feeling about it. And at the time that I was letting it go, and I'd gone through this process where I even thought of asking my dad for the money, and then I thought, no, I can't ask him for the money. And then one day he came and he was talking about, you know, how he had all of these expenses, and thought, I definitely can't ask him for the money. And then another day when he came, and I And I just shared my journey about where I was up to, and I was really interested in doing this class, but I didn't know how, and that was it. I thought no more about it. And then a couple of weeks later, Marta was very close to coming, like it was only a matter of days away. And I was driving home this day from my work at the clinic, and I just had this feeling that I would be able to do it, but I still had no idea how. I got home, and here on the table was the money from my dad to do this, with a note saying, "This is for you to be able to do your Reiki too." Now, I just burst into tears because I knew that at that point that the universe was supporting me to do this. And that, so it taught me a huge lesson around money, that if I'm meant to do something, that I will be supported. I was able to pay him back before the end of the year. But at that time, that just touched me so deeply. And it's mm-hmm. a lesson for me about the money with Reiki that's just been invaluable and that I believe has served me all these years.
Mm-hmm.
So I went on and did second stage.
Great.
And then I continued to organize for Marta. And then out of my mouth, and not premeditated, it just fell one day, well, what's involved in being initiated as a Reiki master. And I kind of had to kind of reel from even saying it because it wasn't something that I anticipated would come out of my mouth.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, so, you know, I continued to organize classes for her and always was obviously reviewing, learning. She would live with us for weeks, many weeks at a time, and so there was always a lot of personal interaction. And so that was, and a lot of preparation went into that. And then in 1989, I was in Eugene, Oregon, and had the opportunity to be initiated as a master.
Wonderful. Well, this is a great story for our first segment of our show, Lynn Manette. Thank you.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, and money, you know, is a great topic in this community. We'll come back to this.
Yep.
You know, it's very interesting when you go to another country and you say this is so many U.S. dollars for first degree and so many U.S. dollars for second degree and so many U.S. dollars for a master's. And then the person says, yes, but what about in my currency? So it's much easier if the currency was in German mark at the time or in Dutch guilders. But when you talk about Canadian dollars and Australian dollars, both of which were much lower in value than the American dollar, that's when a lot of conversations happen. And I'm and I know that this has been one of my interesting processes with Australia, because when I first got down there, years after Lynette had taken Reiki, one of the first things that someone said to me was, well, you know, we Australians, we're going to change your attitude about money. And that was really interesting for me, and that was the beginning of the whole conversation that actually is still going on today. So I'm wondering how that has been for you, Lynette.
Yeah,
was that ever a part of your process?
Oh, definitely.
Yeah?
Definitely, yeah. I mean, the interesting thing is that, where do I go with this? There's so much to it, really, to this topic, one topic alone. I know myself when I actually started asking for master training that I was using the Australian dollar and not the American dollar. And I remember actually having a conversation with you one day. I'll never forget it. I didn't even see myself sitting on my bed talking with you. And you were saying, you know, you were basically sharing your perspective and understanding of why it needs to be American dollars. And I was saying to you, Phyllis, I can hear what you're saying, and I'm not ready for that yet. Mm-hmm. And you were so generous with your spirit and holding me in a place that I was able to really sit with that for quite some time. And because I felt like I couldn't make that change unless I was ready in myself I couldn't just make it because somebody else told me that it needed to be that way.
Right.
I needed to make that change from somewhere inside of myself. And it was actually at a Reiki Alliance conference, and Paul was speaking, and he was talking about something that absolutely had nothing to do with money. And he used some words that absolutely just did something. Something happened inside of me. And the words that he used were surrender to the form. And I felt this physical sensation in my heart, and something shifted inside of me. Actually, for most of the rest of that conference, I was in tears. And I knew that I had shifted around the money.
Uh-huh.
And so then I was able to come home and then make that change from Australian dollars to US dollars. But until that shift happened, I wasn't able to do it. So I had my own personal journey with that as well. So there's been so many parts about the money alone that have played, you know, that have been such a learning curve for me that I'm eternally grateful to Reiki for.
Well, you know, a lot of people feel like it's sort of money. There's this a whole attitude about money being separated from spiritual practice, and I think that has been a tradition through the ages, and somehow in this particular practice, it's very clearly and consciously together. I can only surmise how it developed in this way, but more than that, it really took on for me this learning curve for myself of how money in our lifetime has gone from being something that was needed to survive to something that can be a weapon, or it can be, it can take away as well as give to people. And I think that that's really confusing. And in my practice, I have seen that it becomes an extension of my spirituality, and that has been an amazing process for me. I'm just wondering if that is familiar to you at all.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And yes. Could you, do you have any story or anything more to say about that?
Probably not more, other than the fact that I still see in my life every day that element is very much a part of my journey of spirituality. My understanding and learning to trust in the universe, in Reiki. It's still daily, really, for me.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I see money as an extension of my own energetic being.
Yeah.
So it, and for me, isn't separated from myself, and it's not me. So
yeah.
There are these two things, and also that it's in the way that I use it, it's in the way that I hold it, and the way that I extend it to people that makes it a part of me. It isn't that I take on the normal social behavior with money. And so when I pay bills, I feel like I'm really exchanging energy with someone, and this is building a relationship.
Yeah.
So I don't pay money to people that I don't want to extend a relationship with, mostly. So
yeah.
I do have trouble with the gas companies, I have to say. So anyway, your journey with Reiki continued, and you became a master?
Yep. I was initiated as a master in Eugene, Oregon, which is actually Marta's hometown. And I was initiated in a little creek, little babbling brook. And on my way, actually, to a master's gathering where you were at also, I'd met you a little bit earlier at Brighton Bush. and I have to say I was pretty shook up at that particular time. I didn't have a lot of input in that meeting or gathering because I was still processing my own master initiation. And in fact, I made a decision to take time to process that initiation, my master initiation. I didn't feel in any way ready to teach. And I had a good 14 months actually processing the master initiation before I even started to teach.
Mm-hmm.
I completed my training with MADA in Bali in 1990, and wasn't long after that that I did start teaching.
Uh-huh. And then you taught for several years.
Mm.
And then a change came. Can
yeah.
you talk about that?
Yeah, sure. I had lots of classes, very regular classes. I'd also started training masters by the time I found out about the practice that I've now entered. And then as my journey continued, I had an interesting experience, and I think it kind of opened me up to stepping into the practice I'm now in. And it was, you know, there was some teaching happening around Australia that was making claims of more than, better than Reiki. And I made a decision. I didn't feel connected to going and learning. I was thinking, though, of going and listening to the person do a presentation. And
uh-huh.
then I kind of went through this process of, like, looking at the reasons, looking at my motivation, and my, where am I at with Reiki? You know, what's my journey? Am I interested in looking at more than, better than, greater than claims? And I had this, I don't know whether this story is one that I came up with, one that I heard and don't know where I heard it from, but it's about a little boy who was at his first day of school, and he was, they were learning how to draw the number one on the blackboard. And
uh-huh.
then the second day of school come, and they were drawing the number two on the blackboard. And but the first little, this one little boy decided everyone else was going on with two, and he wanted to really practice the one until he got it right. And the story kind of goes on the second day, and everyone's on to three, and he's still doing one, and four, and five, and he's still doing one. And they're all kind of going, well, we're advancing, you know, we're doing more than you're doing. And this little boy got up, can't tell you which day it was, let's just say it was day nine, and they're all drawing the number nine, and he gets up and he draws a one on the blackboard, and the blackboard just splits in half. And for me, that symbolized that as he went deeper and deeper and deeper into that one, is he discovered the keys to the universe. And that really spoke to me. And so I realized that I didn't want to look for more than, greater than, better than. I want to go deeper in my practice with Reiki.
Mm-hmm.
And so for me, that was an experience that I was able to now articulate that was important to me.
Mm-hmm.
And in some way, not long after that, it opened up the door for me to discover the practice I'm now entering.
Oh, well, we'll hear more about this after our station break. Good work, Lynette.
Okay.
I'm speaking today with Lynette Kirkman from Australia, and we're having a great storytelling about Lynette's journey, and within that journey are some really key points about the lessons that Reiki brings us, and I guess we could call them conflicts sometimes, but in the way that we look at conflict, for me, this is really a part of my of someone trying to get my attention, and so I call it conflict because it's uncomfortable for me, but those conflicts are really gems of my life, and I learn a lot from it. So Lynette was just on the verge of talking about, I don't know if it was it a conflict for you, Lynette, or just a searching that brought you to your another form of Reiki?
Oh, definitely. I mean, I was very happy in my practice of Yasui Shikiryoho, feeling very fulfilled, and really realizing that I wanted to take myself deeper into my practice of Reiki.
Uh-huh.
So there wasn't any conflict for me. There wasn't even any searching, actually. certainly uh-huh. not at any conscious level. A dear friend and colleague, not long after this experience, a dear friend and colleague had contacted me about his own personal experience of a master who had he'd learnt with, or relearnt with actually, and he came down through a Sui Hayashi and through two Japanese monks to this man who was living in Australia, and that's Dr. Rangapri Maratna, who lives in Sydney. And I really connected with his experience, and what he had to say was resonating with me. Then the conflict began.
Ah.
Because I felt this sense of calling, but it brought up a whole lot of issues for me. You know, it brought up the issue of, what about my relationship with Marta? What about my relationship with you? What about the students that I've already taught? What about the masters that I'd already started to train? What about my family and friends? And so many months I sat in this process. I felt this sense of calling to this particular practice, but not knowing how to manage all of those things. I even recall meeting up with yourself and Paul at the 1995 Reiki Alliance Conference in the Caribbean and talking with you about this sense of calling to this particular practice, but also sharing with you my conflicts and my concerns and the issues that it had brought up for me. And of course, you know, naturally neither of you could give me any answers as to, you know, what that could be for me. And interestingly enough, it was after an experience that I had with Takata. It wasn't something like visual. It was more of a sensing, feeling, hearing. And I had this experience where she was like saying to me, if this is your path, you don't need to worry about the what ifs, you know, what is this and what is that. You know, it's like follow your heart. And so it wasn't long after that that I contacted Runga and said that I would like to go ahead and train with him. And so for me, I recognise that this is not everyone's journey, that many people will find this same place within Yusui Shikuryoho. For whatever reasons, I was called to this particular practice. I think one of the things that happened for me is that it opened my mind to realizing that there is more than one practice, genuine practice, and helped my level of acceptance. I admit that, you know, in my early years I was fairly self-righteous about my journey with Reiki. So it kind of melted that away.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yeah. So do you feel that this was a step that you took, obviously very consciously and very thoughtfully, and with conversations with everyone concerned, I know. But I'm just wondering if there isn't anything that you can just say, this is for you, or do you just feel like you followed your path and all of a sudden you took a turn and you were in another place?
I guess for me, I had a sense of following a calling.
Uh-huh.
And so I guess that calling means a path for me.
Uh-huh.
What I realized in hindsight, looking back, and my position now in Reiki Australia, the role that I hold, what I realize, it's given me the gift of having a broad picture of Reiki.
Uh-huh.
And so I guess for me personally, I've needed to go through this journey in order to have this level of acceptance and to have this gift and understanding. Mm-hmm. This is my journey.
Uh-huh.
It may not be for someone else.
Right. Well, I would like to share with the listeners that Lynette and I felt very estranged from her when this happened, and there was an inner journey for me of being able to sense what was happening with Lynette, because she was so deeply connected to me in the early days. And at one point, I wasn't going to Australia for a number of reasons for a few years, so I didn't have any physical contact with her, and we kind of grew out of email contact, and I felt her just slip away, and I thought, well, this is really strange, but then I couldn't find her again, and that was kind of scary for me. So eventually I found out that at the same time, she had started to go to Ranga's teachings and accept his practice and take it on more and more. So that really made sense for me on this energetic level. And then when we met up again, well, at some point we ended up talking, and I found out that you had, or you had contacted me and found out that you were going to start practicing and teaching this other method, which is, what's the name of it? Reiki Jinkai Do. Yeah, Reiki Jinkai Do, that I felt left and abandoned on some level. And also, I felt really confident that you had done it in a way that I felt respected. And that, for me, was the best. Mm-hmm. So I really celebrated, on one hand, you're changing and you're shifting, and on the other hand, I it was really sad for me.
Yeah.
Because I lost a certain piece of our relationship.
Yeah.
However, in the last years, Lynette has been able to be, I think you've put yourself out, Lynette, to be a very beautiful balance point for really being ecumenical. And I think that's really a wonderful and very important place to hold in the energy of all the different forms and practices of Reiki today.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So that's really a wonderful place to be. Thank you very much for holding that place for all of us.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. Yeah.
Thank you.
Because it really brought me a place of knowing that this could happen with this kind of energy. Because there are lots of the masters that I initiated, for instance, who either created their own system or went to another system or left Reiki altogether and decided to practice another spiritual practice. And I always felt incomplete, mostly, because I never got to have these conversations that I had with you.
Mm.
And I felt that as in our connection spiritually as well as emotionally and, you know, just feeling a good friendship and collegial relationship, that respect was there, and that made such a difference for me.
Yeah. I mean, I didn't ever lose that. And as you know, that was one of the conflicts that I went through, was how that would affect our relationship.
Mm-hmm.
And and I didn't ever lose that, and I still haven't. You know, I hold you in the highest regard and the highest respect, This is for me a journey I've needed to take.
Yeah. And I can really support you, and it's just so wonderful for me to have this kind of experience.
Yeah.
You know, and it feels like a step that I can take into what I would call really practicing spirituality right here today, you know, in our everyday lives. I have with me today Lynette Kirkman from Australia, and we've been just sharing our experience of being masters together, and just this process of Lynette moving from the practice that she was initiated in originally to another very strong practice for her, and really leaving one practice and going to the next. And I think this is another one of the characteristics of your journey that I've really appreciated, is that you've honored and respected the form that Marta gave you and the students who remain in that form, and then you've gone to another form and not carried, I assume, carried with you this form, but you're able to hold a whole other form without needing to bleed these two together, blend these two together, and I think that's really amazing.
Yeah. It took some processing. I went through a transitional time where I felt like I was kind of blending, and then that just didn't feel right. It didn't feel like it was honoring either practice, and so I could then no longer do that. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Yeah, and that's really true for me. Yeah. One of the other things that is, that's important, I think, to also acknowledge is that, my early conversations with Rangra were not, one of the best conversations that I had had. So it was interesting for me to also watch him develop as a master and as a placeholder, a lineage holder of his own practice. Mm. And I could really see in some way a mirror of myself, because I think that, I know that I went through a lot of these processes myself in very different way, because we were very different people. But I had, and I wanted to tell the listeners that I had this opportunity because of Lynette to attend a conference where he and I both were guest speakers, and it was really wonderful to reconnect with him at that moment.
Yeah,
and a part of that, Lynette, was the way that, and is the way that you hold both of us, and I'm really appreciative of that. It's a very big gift for both of us. I would like to speak for him too in this moment.
Yeah, well, thank you, Phyllis. Interestingly enough, for some reason, when I fully stepped into this practice, I had this sense and this feeling that I would, be a bridge in some way.
Uh-huh.
And I believe that in my role in Reiki Australia and being involved in organizing the conference and both of you coming and attending and doing presentations, that in some way I've participated in that role and fulfilled that bridge, met that. Yeah. So that's been very important to me.
Yes, I would say so. So part of this theme for me today in having Lynette on the show is to just point out that, there are times when, our past calls us to do something else or to, put Reiki in the background perhaps and put something else in the foreground, like, for instance, parenting. It's a really great example when you have young children. And what's important for me is that we honor these different parts of our lives without feeling guilty and creating a space for things to be ended clearly and or to be put in a certain place clearly so that you can choose again should that time ever happen. And I feel like you've done that beautifully.
Thank you.
Yeah, that's really inspiring for me. So there are some questions for me I have. Do you feel that, so for you, Reiki was a spiritual practice from the very beginning?
Absolutely.
As part of your spiritual unfoldment?
Yeah.
As a human being. And so when you say that you wanted to go one step deeper, I'm just wondering, is there some way that you can describe what that meant? Or do you feel like even just this change from one form to another took you deeper?
For me, what happened is that I feel that this change took me deeper into my own practice with Reiki. But that doesn't mean that it will be that way for someone else.
Uh-huh.
But in this particular case, I feel that it seems like in hindsight it's a journey that I've needed to take to have this open space. And so that, for me, is going deeper in my practice with Reiki. So it seemed that it needed at the level of the world to take this expression. Yeah, for me to be at this place where I am now.
And could you describe for me at all what you consider to be a spiritual process?
The total essence of my being, my everyday life, how I am willing to listen and respond to my inner callings, my inner knowing. That's Reiki for me.
And how do you know that it's an inner calling and not just some whim?
That's a good question. Probably a lot of deep thought and contemplation. Asking a lot of questions of spirit, you know. And then kind of reaching a point that you feel it in your body. Like for me, what happens is that, you know, even sometimes when I have an idea, for example, that's like in my head. But until I feel like it must for me drop into my body and be like a cellular experience, and it's at that level of knowing. And that's kind of what I look for and what my journey with Reiki is.
Well, I think that I've struggled with this particular question myself because, you know, one of the things about spirituality, what we might call spirituality today, is that it's gotten fairly mixed up, I would say, I guess I can use this word, with something I would call metaphysics or metaphysics and sort of New Age thought, and it's not that they're separate, but it feels like they look at things, at certain situations from a certain kind of perspective. Would you say that's true?
Yes. I mean, there's definitely, I don't see Reiki as like a New Age movement, and I understand what you're saying, and I do feel that they're actually different. You know, there's a difference of making something happen in one's life to surrendering it to in one's life. And I guess the latter is my journey with Reiki. And I think a lot of New Age and what I would class maybe New Age movement is making something happen. And so that's quite different for me with Reiki. It's more about surrendering.
And I just wanted, it leads me into a whole line of thought about, what we choose to blend in and what we imagine Reiki to be. So one of the things that's always a balancing act for me is it my will, or is this what I need, or is it what is my true place? So there are these three things that I'm constantly running back and forth between. So I can appreciate that this was also a big question for you in your search for where, you know, what practice am I going to follow and, you know, where am I going to go after this? Well, Lynette, thank you so much for your story today.
Thank you, Phyllis, for the invitation. It's been a pleasure. It's been a learning curve.
And thank you for waking up so early in the morning.
You're welcome.
Well, from the land down under, affectionately known as Oz, we have had a wonderful conversation with Lynette Kirkman and her journey with Reiki. This is Phyllis Kurumoto with Reiki, Balancing Form and Essence.